Hello, welcome to the long overdue podcast. I do apologise. I've got one recorded with Piff, and that's going to go out soon, but it's going to take a bit of editing, I think. The tech was a bit all over the place. Totally not Piff's fault. So that should be quite interesting. And then I took on a couple of projects that were way more time consuming than I thought, which is fine. You know, it's been a really good process. One of them was creating a beginner's course in magic, not for my own course, though it will be on there at some point. But, you know, I started it thinking, oh yeah, I'll put these tricks in, and then became quite passionate about it and actually realized that I wanted it to be more of a kind of beginner's to pro. So you go through the stages of learning beginner's tricks, but importantly, the concepts, using them as a way to kind of, you know, explain the concepts of magic and doing it properly, and then finishing with stuff, you know, like the ambitious card and a sponge ball routine and things like that, that I actually perform. And I think it's a good way to teach, and I'm going to make it so people can't get to that bit until they've been through the rest of it. And I think it's quite a nice idea, but I just geeked out on it, got way over involved, and it took me, well, last week I was in the office till like 3 a.m. and going back in at 7:30 a.m. And that isn't a boast. It was not good. At the age I am now, what happens is that it takes about, I think if I do that 3 times, it's about 6 months to get over it. It feels like that. I'm just always so tired. I just think that, oh yeah, I'll be all right. And I'll be a bit tired the next day, but it's just this, don't, yeah. But anyway. Cool, what a whinge that is. That's no excuse. The main reason I haven't done one is because I took a big break, and you know, a lot of people talk to me about this. That thing is, when you haven't done something for so long, it becomes like a big barrier. You know, it becomes a big scary thing, like going into the software. I think, have I forgotten how to do it all? And so I did a conversation with Noel Qualter, which was so much fun. You know, bless Noel. You know, I was like, can I do one with you? And I wanted to talk about the session, and it was just after the session, so that was a month ago, or whatever it was now. And then Blackpool is next week, so we talk a lot about Blackpool and about conventions. So this is a kind of convention special, I suppose. We talk about Blackpool mostly, have a bit of a review on the session, talk about how Blackpool can kind of make or break you. It can inspire you, but it can do the opposite, or as can many conventions, and we sort of talk about how to avoid that. Our obsession with dealers and why we get so obsessed with, you know, who's selling stuff at the convention. Noel's got some really good tips on how to decide what to buy. And I'm reading this clearly because I edited it this morning. And how brilliant Richard McDougall is. And we talk about Richard McDougall, and Noel talks about how a lot of people won't know who he is. And so, you know, that's a tip for you. The problems with lectures, how we sound like we're criticizing people but ourselves, I've written here, which is quite funny. So we do talk about, you know, magicians in this, and we are totally talking about ourselves in that. If you were to listen to it with the wrong ears, you would think we were sort of putting ourselves above that. Absolutely not. Me and Noel are constantly talking about how, you know, flawed we are. So please don't think that. But anyway, that's a very long waffle. Just to say, you know, this is still going. I really appreciate your support, your messages, and, you know, from members of my course, onlinemagic.co, but non-members, just a lovely community of people. You know, and I never get any hate, really. I get the odd snidey little remark, which is kind of lame, and it's quite funny when it happens because everybody kind of jumps to my aid. It's really, really lovely. So thanks for that. We're going to get on with it now. And if you're still here for this waffly intro, again, thank you very much. The sound might be all over the place on this. Like I said, I haven't done it for a while, and I want to get this out tonight before Blackpool. I'm sitting in my car now, having just watched a migration with the kids. So with my sort of studio, I've set up a little studio in my car. I can't wait for my son to get out of a party. So 2 hours to kill, perfect. Right, thanks very much. Go and see onlinemagic.co, please. It's just ridiculously large and joyous. That's what she said. And I've just been watching The Office quite a lot. And Do follow me on Instagram at Steve Faulkner. That'd be lovely if you like what I do. And the channel, of course, Real Magic Review. I'll waffle on at the end. God, 5 minutes. Sorry about that. Let's get on with it, shall we?
Snakes.
What was that?
Saying snakes little... because otherwise I'm just, all I am is a big pudding that sat here smiling inanely.
Mid-magic conventions season, which basically means two conventions, doesn't it? And I don't want to put any other conventions down. I'm doing Chris Cross's one in February. But other than that, when's the South Tyneside one?
October, innit, I think.
Yeah, okay. So I made that one. Yeah. Apparently it's lovely. Have you been?
I think I've been twice over the years. It always looks great. And it's just a bit of a, it's a massive journey in it, but I mean, it's always good lineup. And I just, yeah, I just, I've only been twice. Tamariz was there 1 year. And then the second year I went, I have no recollection of who was booked, but it was good.
Yeah. You know, I want to, cause I don't really understand. For me, it's all about sort of getting together with other magicians, and other than blackballing the session, a lot seem to, and not South Tyneside maybe, but a lot seem to struggle to get people in. And I don't really understand that. If there was one near here, I just presume everybody would go.
Do you know what it is? It's habit. That's the big problem with all these things, right? Is that people traditionally, like, look at the IBM convention, right, which is dying on its ass and has been for 10 years. The reason people don't go to that is that the audience for it got old and died. And they haven't got in a new audience. And getting people to just, once you decide that you're a person that goes to a magic convention, like Blackpool is on so many people's calendar. You go, oh, yeah, I'm a guy that goes to Blackpool. Well, if you are a, you know, if you start up a new convention, you've got to try and persuade 200 people that didn't have that part of their plans that this is something they go to all the time. And lineup isn't enough.
No, it's a funny thing with lineup, isn't it? And I don't, funnily enough, I've just been on the Blackpool website and I couldn't find the lineup. And then I found a thing after a while saying they release it officially 2 weeks before, but it's on the app, you know?
Yeah, it's on the app, yeah.
But, you know, people go on a website, don't they? And they kind of, that's where they find out. But yeah, it's, I suppose if you're a beginner, lineups, well, no, obviously it's important to everybody. Like if there was nobody there, I don't know. You know, maybe if it was just a get together.
People always do that running joke, don't they? Of why are we paying £200 to meet up when we could just go to, you know, a cottage or a hotel in the middle of nowhere, not pay £200 to go to the convention if you just want to hang out with your mates. But the truth is, no one ever does that. The theme of the convention is the reason why you go, but often you don't take advantage too much of the convention stuff that's happening.
Is that to do with the fact that you've been going for a while? Because I'm kind of new again. I went to a few conventions and then didn't go for years and then started going again for various reasons. And I still, there's certain people I still think I need to go and see that. Whereas you're someone that's been, oh, and how many Blackpools have you done in a row now?
Oh, God. Well, much more than 20. 20, 23, 24, maybe.
Yeah. So it's a different thing, isn't it? But you...
Yeah.
So what is it for you now? Is it solely the social?
Not anymore, because I'm a dirty dealer.
Oh, of course, so, you are.
I'm one of the filthy, dirty dealers, yeah. So it's weird. I think I could only think of it before, you know, in the years of not flocking tricks. I was always excited about, you know, certain lecturers and the shows to a certain extent. The shows have massively improved in the last sort of 3 or so years, but I never really gave a toss about the shows when they were 9-hour marathons, but now
yeah,
I'm into them more. I think it's probably 70-30 in favour of a social and the dealers compared to the booked acts when I was a punter. Flogging tricks now, I have to try and change my mind about Blackpool, and it isn't just a big jolly now, and it's an important trade show in my corporate empire, and that's hard to sort of square that, because I still want Blackpool to be loads of fun. It's Christmas for me. I blooming love it.
So is it? Are you not dreading it? But are you? Is this one? Because you haven't been. You were a dealer a couple of years ago, I think. But you haven't done that much, have you?
Oh, not yet. Exactly. I've never properly done it. I've just had a stand and had a trick that year. But like this is different. This feels much bigger. You know, it's a much bigger financial commitment, much bigger sort of involvement. You know, my career has always been, you know, gigs are, you know, how I make my money, and flogging tricks is a nice little sideline. And I'm kind of slightly changing the balance now, where it's flogging tricks is a larger part of my life, and for me and Roddy. So having a big stand, making a lot of noise, and having some belting tricks, and hopefully getting people to you know, come and visit us, say hello / buy stuff, then it's going to be huge for us. So that changes how I experience Blackpool.
It's a weird thing as a punter, the dealers, because you get so excited about it. And if you go on the Blackpool website, you can see the dealers, but you can't see who's on, you know.
Yes.
And I know they'll probably...
The truth is, there's people that just want to go to the dealers, isn't there?
And you get caught up, like we've talked about this so many times, but you would see me on the last day broken at Blackpool. And that was because I'd kind of
Sunday service where he's on fumes. Yeah. Death warmed up. Yeah, there's people in Piss Alley who looks like they're in much better form than you are. There's absolutely wrecked. Let this homeless man in who's absolutely broken.
But it was in the past it would be sort of a hangover, but also tiredness, but just being overwhelmed. Like I remember walking, yeah. So many people I'm sure empathize with this, walking around that dealer's hall, walking around the dealer's hall with a sense of excitement on day one, and by the end of it just doing these circuits of kind of, like you talk about habit, just kind of not really knowing what I'm looking for, not being able to make decisions on things, not being able to understand whether it's a trick I really want or am I getting caught up in everything. And it's overwhelming, you know.
Well, there's a couple of things that happen. Certainly for me, walking around the dealers, in your head you go, I am looking around the dealers, looking at magic tricks. But what you're really doing is walking around having stop and chats. You walk five paces. Hiya, you're all right. Yeah, you're good, thanks. Yeah. No, not bought anything yet. And you walk another five paces and you have the same conversation. And the truth is, the only way you'll actually go around and look at the stuff is when, you know, there's a lecture from someone that's put in 2,000 seats, you know, putting 2,000 people on their ass upstairs. Because every other time, all the dealers are, you know, five deep at the stand. You can't see anything.
No, and I'm always fascinated by what stands have loads of, you know, I'm not going to mention names, but I've seen, well, actually I will. I remember seeing Louis de Matos there with those DVD sets, which I still think are the best things you can get DVD-wise, other than Bill Malone and what's the other one I always say? There's a Career in the Bill Malone set and another one.
Doc Eason,
yep. And there's one more that I picked up the other day and started looking through and thought, now this is, those two things, you could have a whole career and you genuinely wouldn't need anything else. But Louis de Matos' ones, you know, where you've got your one performer, magician, everything they've ever done, interviews, hours and hours of stuff, with about two people on his stand and another stand a couple of stands down, which is somebody I, you know, like, just with like five, six deep. And you look at what would be more useful for you as a magician.
Magicians aren't interested. They don't want helping. Best trick wins. And if you said to them, right, if you watch this DVD and you, or this download, you know, it was a DVD maybe, and you've got to put a month into it, and at the end of that month, you will be 50% better magician, which I consider to be a very small commitment, or you can buy this trick with a flap card. Like, yeah, I'll have two of those, please. Obviously, if the caveat is, if we're selling a flap card, then definitely that will make you a better magician. So.
Yeah. Well, I think if we admit that we're buying it just for
the hobbyist in us, and you know, we want to take it home and play with it. We might show some people, we might not, then that's fine. It's just that I've been there, of, and I still am sometimes going, if I had that one thing, and I've made a big decision recently that nothing gets added. You know, there's no more props being added to my close-up case. There might be tricks added to it with the props I've got, yeah. but I'm not going to add anything else. And also the understanding that I've had is that the stronger the trick doesn't necessarily mean the better it goes across, you know, to an audience of lay people.
Yeah.
It's not about strength of trick. There's more to it. There's the aesthetic of it. There's the feel of it. There's the whether it's a kicker
does it
or
suit
not.
You? Yeah.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Have you got something similar to that? Yeah. Yeah. There's a checklist. Something we might like talk about, which is, you know, how to profile a trick, whether it's right for you. And I think if you've been doing magic for a long time, no one's got the actual answers of spotting a stone cold winner. But if you at least do, you know, due diligence going through those things. So for me, it's, if I'm going to try and, obviously the number one goal for me is, can that trick get into my A-list? So in order to know that, I go, all right, does the trick that's being shown, does it have a, am I already doing a trick that's got that power? If it is Thing to Impossible Location, is it better than the Thing to Impossible Location I'm already doing? If it is, you know, one thing jumping from one hand to the other, have I already got a better version of that? If it at least seems different or newer, then I'm interested in that. If I know that the dealer or the creator has had a good track record, that's another sort of tick. If it's priced cheap and it's just a punt, then maybe that helps as well. If I know, the big one for me is if I know mates that have bought it who I know are smart. I remember 1 year, was it maybe 2 years ago, the lighter, Gentleman Magic, yeah. Where with the flash paper bomb. Yeah, flash. I bought, because I was flogging tricks, I had some cash, and the dealer was only taking cash. Of course they were. I know 10 mates that had bought the thing, and people running up to me saying, can I get some cash and I'll sort you out later because I want to buy this lighter. And like half a dozen, you know, more than that, probably getting for 10 magicians who I really rate, who I know gig all the time, and they're buying it. You're like, you know what? I've got to get in on this as well. I've got to get it as well. And so things like that really help. Also, if it's an area of magic that even if everyone says, oh, you want to get this trick, it's brilliant. If it's an area that I have no interest in, no matter how good the rope trick is, I'm going nowhere near it. Not because rope magic isn't brilliant. It is. I can't get my head around it. I have no spatial awareness. And it all. When I first learned Professor's Nightmare, I was 10 at and I was first year of secondary school, 10 or 11, first year of secondary school. And I looked at a diagram of Professor's Nightmare from Davenport's. I couldn't make head and tail of it. And I asked a mate of mine, well, I don't know if he would identify as a mate, but the person who was nearest, if he would learn this trick. And between the first break and the second break, he was not a magician. He learned Professor's Nightmare and he taught it to me because I couldn't understand it at all. Not a magician, had to work out what I was looking at. So I'm going nowhere near a rope trick, for example, because I know it's not for me.
Yeah, it's funny because I totally agree. But that working out as I've come and done with that a lot because I've seen tricks that I love and thought they weren't for me, but learned them because of the juggler in me just wants to learn it to learn it. And
yeah.
And then I've taken it out and it's been something that's like the muscle pass is someone I always talk about. When I saw that, I saw someone do it in South Africa in 97, I think, Jacques Lesser or one of his mates. And I thought, I know exactly what he's doing there because I knew a classic palm. I thought, yeah, it looks quite good. But then I wanted to learn it just to learn it because, you know, I got sweaty piggy hands and I thought, well, just as an exercise, learn it. And it's just one of the strongest things, the strongest reactions I get after a one coin routine is that muscle pass. Because it breaks the rhythm, you're vanishing coins, you know, it's very pretty and very lovely. And then you do that and it kind of, it's like a little bolt to people and they can't get their head around it. And then you do the coin on the hand or whatever. Linking rings, you know, I always loved it. The aesthetic of it, didn't think I could pull it off. And so I think there's something about going with your gut, about sort of trying to tune into the first time you saw it and remember that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think for me, there's certain tricks that I never got a chance to watch as a non-magician. Cups and Balls was taught to me before I'd ever actually watched it, which I'm so sad about. And there's I'd never seen it until I knew that you had four balls and you stuck the oranges in at the end.
Yeah,
it's things like that. But to be able to watch something for the first time and remember that thrill, that bolt of excitement, that is special stuff.
It is, isn't it? And at the session convention, I was thinking about the tricks that got that audible layperson gasp from magicians. The highlights, just watching the audience, were like things like, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, there'll be people that disagree, but just things like Axel Hecklau's ring routine in the late night show.
Yeah.
The bit of rope stuff that he did and all the stuff he did. Axel's stuff is pretty much all based on classic ideas, you know, those kind of nuts and bolts of what we do, but done beautifully. And he showed me a coin trick privately as well. And I was like, I'd need to do that. How much was that coin? He's like, somebody knows makes it and it's like $800 for the coin or something. But you've got, Mental Block hit the soap pour. Oh man, he was in this show. He was
the session.
Yeah. Ruben Villagrand. Sorry.
Oh, I didn't see it. Right. Yeah.
Right. So Ruben Villagrand has this salt pour and it's brilliant. And it's those kind of, you know, Luke's show, stroke lecture, yeah, all classics. And I think you sort of compare that to, and I'm not putting anything down at all, but some other stuff that was all really good. I think everything was pretty solid. But the reactions was that stuff. And you know, part of my lecture in Blackpool is saying, you know, let's reconnect, you know, forget all the rules we're given of you're not supposed to like that because it's cheesy and tacky, sponge balls, Lincoln rings, and go back to the first things you saw and felt. And it's a very different thing. Yeah. And it also breaks up the card. Now, don't get me wrong, I adore card tricks and they get incredibly strong responses. And going back to what you said about tricks that you didn't know would get the response they would. So John Allen's Destination Box, you know, I started doing that recently and it gets a different reaction than most things, as does things like Level One. And I wouldn't have known that had I not started performing them. To me, it's just another card to Impossible Location. So it's,
yeah,
but it's just that solid stuff. And I think there's a kind of movement now of people even subconsciously going back to that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly going back to what you said, I think there's different types of magicians and there are, you know, general practitioners, people that are a good hand, right? And then there are proper grown-up magicians. And in that category are Tom Stone, Hecklau, and Luke. And they're just the people I've seen sort of lately. But where details, every detail matters, they are, and those things are sacred. If you can find a magician who cares so much about everything, like I know my strengths and my weaknesses, and certainly to talk of me and Roddy, obviously, we have a lot of the same strengths, but also some slightly different strengths as well, which really helps. But those people that I just happened to mention, you know, creative, smart, and also problem solving, they'll look at stuff and go, you know what? I reckon that can be shined up more. And I'll keep going. If any little wrinkle, keep going until it's all been smoothed out and you're left with close to perfection. That's just, when I watch that, just blows my mind because I know, I met up with a really good friend, Richard McDougall, who is a brilliant magician.
Oh, I love
to show him a couple of other things. He's the nicest man.
He is.
I'm guessing the people that are listening, 90% of people probably have no idea who he is, only because he's never sold his act. He's never, you know, he's not selling tricks. But wow, what a magician and what a lovely man. So Rich kicked my ass because I said, look, we've got these tricks for Blackpool and I just, you know, can you take a look at them? Because he's, again, got that magical touch, almost, you know, sort of British Vernon, just to be able to say, right, stop doing that. You're going to need to work the routine, get, you know, just changing those small little things. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing to watch someone who understands magic so perfectly that can make tiny 2% adjustments and make things, you know, hugely better.
And that's what, there's two sides to that for me. There's a side that is so essential once you've got to a certain level, I think. But the danger of looking at those details, if you're a beginner and you go in and you're working on a card trick or your ambitious card and you see someone saying, for example, there's no point in turning the card back over before you take it off and put it in the middle of the deck, right? As a double turnover. Now, when you're established and maybe you're doing a parlor show or you're doing stuff of it, that stuff starts really mattering. And it matters to me so much because I want to, it's a constant journey of perfection, of moving towards the perfection that you'll never get to. And that is what creates the joy of it. However, I've been in situations before where I've been saying, oh, I'm not taking that trick out because actually it doesn't make sense starting doing that. You've got to start with that foundation, I think, and go out and do it in a flawed way rather than say, oh, no, that person that I really admire said that, therefore I'm not doing that. And you get into it. And I'm someone that's really easily influenced, right? So I listen to loads of people saying different things and end up stifled and kind of paralyzed. So I think to know that they're almost two different things. You get a trick to a level where it's performable, and then you work on it rather than you wait till it's perfect and then take it out, because if you're like me, you never will.
100%. You know, going back to something that used to get trotted out all the time, only because I think it's got a point about it. People used to say, don't learn from video because you'll end up being a copycat. And I used to watch Michael Amar casting a shadow. And I thought, it's all right. I'm never going to copy that. He looks like an arsehole doing that. It's a daft it's a daft thing to do. I mean, not that he is. He's a brilliant magician, but like that's a dick thing to do unless you're doing it, you know, in a shticky. I mean, he kind of was doing it as a gag, but I think about 30% of a gag.
Yeah.
So I thought, I don't want to do that. And that's why whenever I get a trick, we've talked about this before, but getting a trick to a certain stage and then just going to perform it for people before, you know, so as I can gather the lines, let people feed lines to me. I want to get the structure. I want to get the core of the trick, where I'm going to, where I start, and maybe one presentational line. So, like Mini Burke, you know, is I bought this amazing technology, do one thing brilliantly, find cards. When I was in the early days, I had that. I didn't know where the rest of it was going, but I was so happy because I thought, you know what? If nothing else, that's an interesting hook. Find one line and then just go out and do it for people as much as possible.
Yeah, and then adapt it.
Let it build around that. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and talking about so that's why I kind of like, and Blackpool are doing it now. I think since Russ and everybody else took over, is that they're going towards you got the classic lectures, but also talks and people talking about.
Yeah.
Theory and their idea of it, and of course it's only their theory, and I think there's a bit of a change there that's been helpful for me, because like things like card magic lectures, I can watch a card magician that I adore do a lecture and just I can't learn in that environment. Someone shows me 10 card tricks in a lecture, 5 card tricks, I can watch the show bit at the beginning, then the teaching comes in and it overwhelms me, so I have to go off net then with the book and do it. And that's why, you know, I think a lot of people, when have they seen a card magic lecture, they go, yeah, it's great, but then I, you know, and then they started almost going wanting to go off with a deck of cards and do it. So I think that that's been a problem in Blackpool for me before, especially with the vastness of the rooms. You know, if you're near the back, which I inevitably probably will be because I feel too sort of hemmed in, is there a place to kind of start adapting those kind of lectures to almost a workshop thing? You know, where you're given time to get the cards out and go through.
All I am is a big pudding that sat here. All I am is a big pudding that sat here. All I am is a big pudding that sat here. Smiling inanely. Smiling inanely. Smiling. Smiling. Smiling inanely. There's people in Piss Alley who looks like they're in much better form than you are. Can you think of any tricks or moves or specifically sort of techniques that you've learned directly from the lecture you're in?
No.
Yeah.
Not one.
Like you might go, oh, that's interesting. I'll pursue that further. But You know that amount of time when the lecturer said, right, get your cards out. You're going to learn this now. You know, like for me, I just can't retain the information. Maybe others can. It's just the way my brain works is complete overload. I don't want to learn in that environment as well. I want to be able to do it on my own terms. So, you know, if it's something I'm interested in and you'll sell me a way to go back and sort of learn that technique, then I'm happy with that. But I find it very hard in the environment of a lecture to learn it. Because the truth is, 60 years ago, you know, 70 years ago, sort of, great magicians starting doing these magic lectures that became things. And they were a couple of hours of brilliant magicians teaching you incredible sleight of hand techniques that you could learn from these gods of magic. And it's not anymore. It's very often tricks to punt. An hour, certainly at Blackpool, an hour lecture is really 50 minutes, 10 minutes of, or 5 minutes of, you know, selling the stuff. And also, the bigger the lecture, and Blackpool is a good example of it, because it doesn't get any bigger than that. Even if it was a brilliant magician, everything has to be stripped back, dumbed down to a level of absolute redundancy. I'm not sure what you can learn, because Daryl, 20 years ago, did a lecture. You know, the brilliant sort of American magician, the magician's magician. And he did a lecture, and he had a sort of a trick, and it was sort of half a joke. I can't really remember what the trick was. And he smiled in a sort of Daryl way and said, I was going to attempt to do the terrible impression of Daryl, but I won't. He said, it's amazing what you can get out of just a double lift, right? And you'd expect the sort of to be a sort of smile laugh. But what happened is, it ripped the room apart, a laugh that shook the room and that told me they had no idea what a double lift was. Not a clue. Because you can only, like, if you show that to someone who does know, they go, you're right. It is good that you can get so much out of it. They hadn't got a clue. Because the only thing you can tell about the Blackpool audience is that they've got £200. It's a lot of people who, you know, very often are newer to magic. Maybe there's some experienced people, but the lecture standard tends to be lecturing towards the people who've been in magic for the first 3 months, which is no bad thing. I love them and they're great. But of course, there are 5,000 people. It'd be great if some of the lectures were targeted towards different people. I mean, they are, but I lecture, you know, if you're looking to sell stuff, beginners and amateurs are the people you sell them to.
And that's what I don't get, because I was watching the there's some lost footage of Marlow that Vanished Ink put out of his lecture. I've also watched, you know, old Di Vernon clips of lectures. And there's none of that. There's this bit where Vernon kind of goes, oh, apparently there's some stuff in the back of the room, and carries on. And you're watching someone and it's enjoyable, you know.
That's Chase.
Yeah. It's just great. And it's you know, I am inspired watching that. And I remember being inspired watching Michael Ammar, because of all of his tricks were great. And he would run through them almost knowing that you weren't going to remember every bit. So it's like the summary of the moves, some tips on the moves, you know, that you could write down, that, but nobody does. And then obviously the notes are really important afterwards. And with my lecture, it was so difficult because, of course, everybody was, you know, advising me to do stuff that people could do in 2 minutes, and they could, and for me, that's just not what we do. It's like trying to teach someone a guitar song when they've never picked it. I'm not saying, you know, a lot of those people in the audience will be able to handle a deck of cards, and I'm just sort of being a bit flippant. But, you know, I host guitar workshops from here. I don't do them. My friend Martin Simpson does them, one of the best folk guitarists in the world, and he uses my cameras, and we've done workshops from here. Now, he does those workshops because of who he is. He's at a certain level, so attracts a certain level of guitarists. Now, they're not all phenomenal, but they want those details that they want to put the work in. And magic was always that for me. And I'm not saying I'm right. It was always, and I'm not saying at all that you have to be ultra skilled at sleight of hand to be a great magician. I genuinely don't think that's the case. But whatever you learn, there's going to have to be work there. So I'm someone that gets inspired by seeing something quite difficult. I used to love watching Dan and Dave lecture. I know they were quite dry and all that, but I'd watch them and walk out buzzing because I'd be like, all that stuff looked incredible. I've got some work to do and that work process is going to be a rewarding experience for me. And I wonder if there are a lot of people disillusioned in magic, I think, and kind of frustrated that they're not getting anywhere. So I wonder if it's because we have to go back to the foundations, like I always do with magic. You know, I've got some great moves, but I always go back to check my shuffles are good, and go and have sessions with music on when I'm, you know, doing the basics, going back to things that I'll use and understanding the concepts of a trick, not just doing the trick, all that stuff. And I wonder what happened. When did it happen that it became, and I'm not saying this again, more people are putting talks on now and it's starting to change a bit, I think, but when did it become that thing? Oh, if you do a lecture, you've got to have, I suppose it's the potential, isn't it? If you watch someone like David Stone, right? Done a lecture session. All the stuff he sells is good, right? All of it looks incredible. All of it is, I would say doable, but requires skill, and he totally cleans up. I mean, so you look at that and you go, hang on a minute, I could potentially walk out of here with a couple of grand.
Yep.
And that is very intoxicating, isn't it?
Of course, when people watch lectures, the way they show their enjoyment of a lecture is by paying for the goods. That's they say, I enjoyed that lecture, and I want to be more like that magician who's on screen, so I'm going to pay for his stuff. And people want to be David Stone. They very much, you know, that he's funny, he's exciting, he's intoxicating, he's full of endless life, and they're sat in the audience going, I want to be that guy. And that's why he absolutely cleans up, because who doesn't want to be, you know, the life of the party, the fun, fire-starting, crazy, crazy guy? Williamson can do all those things as well, but he's a bit shit at selling the stuff because he can't bring himself to do it, you know. And David Stone is an example of someone who's all performance and all sales, whereas there's plenty of magicians, some of them I've watched in the last week, who are all sales and no performance skills. It's better for your soul to be all performance and not sell anything, but not good for your bank balance.
No, and I suppose, you know, on that, it can sound quite derogatory, but I think they're both fine. It's just knowing who you are and knowing what you want to get out of it. And I think they're both really valid. You know, I envy the people that are selling loads of good stuff, because there is loads of good stuff. It's not all crap like some people think. There's some great things. But then I think, you know, what at the end of it all, and I've done a lot of this kind of, you know, Ponzi self-development stuff. At the end of it all, what am I going to sit back and be happy with? And one of my regrets will be that I haven't got loads of money enough to take the kids on lovely holidays and stuff like that. So that's a genuine thing. Mm-hmm. But the overriding thing for me is that I look at my performances, which I'm still not happy with. They're still a bit hacky, some of them, you know, so I want to sort of work at that. And that's where I get inspired by certain people and go, actually, like people like Charlie Fry that takes classics and kind of adapts them to himself. Yeah. And I take, you know, at one point, Pete Wardell's tricks and didn't adapt them to myself and, you know, all that. So it's, you know, it's a journey, and kind of you got to be really honest about your flaws, but also where you want to get to. And I think conventions are in a position where they could really, and are starting to, I think, sometimes really capitalize on that, and people can walk away with some cool stuff, but also truly inspired by.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that what you want from a convention, you know, is a moment where you think, you know what, I feel content. Or certainly not from a convention, but from certain products, you go, I want that contentness. I want to feel inspired. I want to feel like I am ready for the next journey in my magical career. Not, I feel like I've been on a stag do and I've had the shit knocked out of me by too many tricks and too many late night chats. Now, I'll have that as well. But if you know, I've been lucky enough to perform at the Magic Castle a couple of times. You come back from that and it's like going to a spa retreat for magicians. Brilliant. You come back and go, oh, wow, I blooming love magic. I can't wait to go out and and blow people's minds and the joyful, warm feeling going through you. And you come back from a magic event, you think, right, I want my bed and I want to shower 10 times every day for the next week because I need to, just need to detox from the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a strange. I mean, I was shocked this time because I didn't drink at the session. So I was like, I'm going to be fine. And then the realization that much of your sort of feeling after a convention isn't just the alcohol, it's the 4 hours of sleep a night and all that kind of stuff. So I was
screaming and shouting at people at 4 o'clock in the morning. And, and also just, I mean, I'm only assuming, but the concentration required, this sounds dark, but we all are shattered every night you go to sleep at Blackpool. And or any convention really, but particularly Blackpool, and maybe that's late nights, and maybe it's hold on, what's going on here? There we go, back my iPad playing up. Maybe that's the late nights, and maybe that is also the furious concentration. To watch a lecture, to understand it, like if you're properly present in the room, that's like being at school. You are listening to a teacher teach for hours, then you are going back to the bar and you're watching, you're having a drink and talk to friends and goofing around, but you're then watching another 6 or 8 hours of magic and the concentration. You're shattered at the end of it, even without boozing, but even without late nights. It is a ferocious, ferocious effort to go through the whole thing. If you do it, obviously, if you go to bed at 7 o'clock at night and you watch two or three things in the daytime, you'll be all right, but you won't have a true Blackpool experience.
No. And so let's just talk. We can talk about this another time as well. But the session, because people are going to want to know that weren't there. Feelings, highlights. You saw quite a lot of it. Because it's the good thing about sessions, is that for those people that don't know, the main difference is for me, is the session all happens in one room. So it's like a conflict. Yeah. So you haven't got to make any choices. There may be a couple of little side things like we did the late night show and things like that. But it's all in one room, so you know where you are, you know you're going to be able to see anything. And I find that, I love that, because I'm someone that really struggles with decisions. I get, I was like, oh, I'm going to miss that massive FOMO. So that's great. So you've got the potential to kind of see everything. And you saw most things, right?
I don't know if I've seen most things. I think I've probably seen half of things for various different reasons. But my review, I thought it was all right. I think it is I think it's missing. Well, it's missing acts that, it's always the where, building in enough time to session. But there's a lot of gaps. So I think more acts, making use of the time. There's just too many gaps. I think the hotel's dreadful, big old scam. And I think there's highlights. Luke Jermay absolutely, blew the room apart. I think Axel is so smart, lots of good stuff in there. Tom Stone's very good. David Stone, who I love, who we talked about earlier, but I've seen that lecture before, so it's not a knock on him, but I'd seen exactly the same as that before. So I enjoyed it, but certainly not as much as in the past. There was lectures that I didn't see because I needed to have a little siesta in the afternoon to rejuvenate. Obviously, the dealers are largely a write-off because Vanishing Ink have got the back of the room for 2 days. And the Sunday thing doesn't really work for me. There's not enough dealers, not enough variety. This is a small room, so dealers are a big part of a magic convention. I think it's there was lots of good things in it, but it feels very corporate and Blackpool feels essential, and right now I think the session doesn't feel essential.
I mean it's good because I kind of disagree. It's clean. I'm 50, so if I had the money, and a lot of years I generally wouldn't have had if I was getting it, if I wasn't hosting it and stuff like that, because there's lots of things to pay for. I can go off for a nap, because I really need that. I needed that place to go and escape. So that was there. Obviously, it's incredibly expensive. The gaps, I like that because I do get so tired, but getting, you know, then again, I'm not young and I can sort of whip off. The dealers, I quite like that really because I don't get into that state.
Yeah.
I like the fact I go into a room and there's kind of five or six dealers or seven or eight, whatever it is. And I go, right, I've seen it all. Great. Right. I know what I want. Yeah. I know who I want to talk to. And that I quite like. I agree with you. I think Axel's funny, you know. I was watching Axel and kind of going, why is he so engaging? Not in a bad way, because mm-hmm. he wasn't trying to do jokes all the time and he wasn't trying to be, he was just talking about what he did, but I was totally on board. I was just, and I do switch off quite easily in lectures, even on magic lectures and subjects that I love, you know. So I was watching him going, there's something about the way he's communicating to me. I suppose it's why I've been able to watch his 3-hour Lincoln Ring and Gypsy Fred stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I want to bottle it. I don't know what, I suppose it's just pure knowledge. You know, he's not kind of, he's just talking from the heart, not in an emotional way, but in a way that it's stuff he has spent hours and hours and hours, like you said about Tom Stone, just sort of getting it better and better. Like I do a version of his routine on stage and I showed it to him. And the move that I do that I've spent the most time on, and he just went, no. And I went, oh, mate.
No.
I was gutted. I was like, what? No. Yeah, and, you know, and at the time I had that, in my head, I had that little kickback thing of going, but no, but it works for me like this. And I think I did say, yeah, I do load. But then just, it was a point of the finger. Just point your finger there before you do the drop. And it's like, oh, it's just so much better. So great. That's kind of what you want. And Tom Stone was laugh out loud funny. Now, Tom Stone's someone that, in his own words, when I said, how do you want me to introduce you? I didn't say it because I forgot. He said, oh, and you can also say I'm the person that annoys people on Facebook. Because he does get kind of on his high horse. And, when you meet
him. Do you know what he is? And I love him to bits, but he's a right salty prick. And I love him to bits, but that is sort of his, he's the stone in the shoe of a lot of people. But I love him.
He's like who's it? The Power of Now. Who's the author? And he does loads of YouTube videos. He's got a kind of lovely magnetism about him. Like he's very unassuming. He's quite kind of introverted, but really funny. I'm just like he kind of throws in these little lines. For those who didn't know, he did this trick with oven gloves, which was a complete faller for me. I just thought it was great.
Yeah.
Similar plot to Morton's thing with the Pringle tube, which is also brilliant, and a fooler, you know. And he did this thing, and then he tipped it, and it was like so obvious, but none of us saw it. And then he was doing like paddle moves and a frustration count with a pair of oven gloves, and it was so hysterical. Joyful. It just silly but strong. And. And he's someone that, again, you know, back in the early days of magic, he was one of the people that really inspired me with his books. So him, again, the salt pour. And what else did he do? He did a salt pour. And he did, this is Ruben Villagrand, who does a lovely kind of silent kind of act that I love, you know, silent kind of semi-circusy clown act. Mm-hmm. And he's got this rope trick, but instead of just doing cut and restored rope, he's got the two... He's got rope, and on the ends, he's got like electrical connectors, and he puts them and pulls them apart and pulls the rope through. Just really, really
I've seen it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, great. Best salt pour gimmick I've ever seen. Of course, me being me, went up to him and went, "Do you want me to review it?" Because I want to do it. and Danny Buckler, you know, Danny went on.
Danny's brilliant.
Just great. Did a talk, you know, and I don't think he'll mind me saying that he was apprehensive about it. And it is a, you know, because it's slightly out of his comfort zone. And I think that fueled him. And he just spoke, you know, halfway through, he was like, God, we haven't got any time. And it was, you know, improvised, but knew what he was going to say. And, you know, more of that. Luke Jermay, again, got the guest of honor. And again, three of classic tricks that he
it
had
was
just.
Four, wasn't it?
He just distilled it down into as close as perfection as you get it for him, you know, importantly.
Yeah.
Let me just, we got Ryan Plunkett. Again, Ryan Plunkett, Card Magic, and some coin stuff. I think Michael Feldman, great stuff, but again, not the sort of thing I can learn. I have to learn that one-to-one or from books. Gala Show, I thought it was pretty strong, the Gala Show. It's a weird situation. You know, I've always said it's the lighting's odd because it's on a corporate stage, but that's what they got. And you know, they did well with it. So David Gerard, his mentalism show, just for people who weren't there, is very, very tight. Does it for, you know, he's done it for Facebook, Google, all that. So it's really tight. It's really together. Very snappy. Loads of jokes. And then he did his show, and then he did a lecture the next day, which was more of a talk, like a PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
Very kind of, I don't want to say very American because it sounds really bad, but very, very kind of like, are you with me? Are you with me? You know, it's you could see it. You could see it in certain situations, just killing. I think it did kill. Like the feedback was great. But your thoughts, please.
I mean, my starting point is, I hate mentalism largely. It is a tax on your time, usually it is. But not to say there aren't great mentalists. I am friends with some of them. But I find it hard to watch mentalism because I find it often incredibly long. Now, no one could say David Gerard, he was moving at light speed. So normally my criticism of mentalism is it takes a bloody age. It is.
It's mentalism.
Stuff starts. Erosion is quicker, and no mentalist can ever do time. They say they're going to do 15 minutes, they'll do an hour and a half. They say they're going to do 40 minutes, it'll be 3 days. It just keeps coming, because in order to be a mentalist, you need to be able to talk. But then no one ever says, "We've got it. You can talk enough now. What can we get to the finish of the trick?" David Gerard came at it from another position of, "I'm going at this with the speed of light and with the enthusiasm of every magician that has ever gone before." He seemed to absorb all of their enthusiasm and just went at it like a bolt of lightning. And certainly for British audiences, and he would have known this, that is shock and awe. We are not going to... he started at 11 and he just got more and more crazy. And it gives you nowhere to go. If you start at that level of explosive energy, where can you go? So within 3 minutes he was asking, you know, are you with me? He go, we are, we've only just started and we are kind of lost here for a minute, because thinking you've come out with so much energy, we don't know where to go. You've got nowhere to build to because you're already bouncing off the walls. The other thing is, sort of, few mentalists, sort of the more modern style of doing it is I set up, like plate spinning, I set up 10 or 12 magical things and I pay those off during my show, but no one in the audience knows what the conditions were for the trick, when that was set up, or what that even means. So, you know, along the way, okay, so you're thinking of your mother's maiden name, you're thinking of a playing card, we're going to go over here, you want to go to a place on holiday, let's get someone else to choose this, let's think of a place, a person, a thing. All these things are set up, and then because of method, and because mentalism is obviously you're thinking ahead and there's discrepancies and there's other method things that need to happen and all these little things, you pay off the things you can do when method allows, but not necessarily to make the effects the clearest. Because he was getting applause, I don't think anyone knew what they were applauding for. I mean, he got something right, but you couldn't really remember what the structure, you couldn't really remember what on earth the sequence was that produced this. If you walk up to someone and say what they're... In fact, you see this a lot on sort of TV magic and mind reading when there's been pre-show. And someone will say, okay, let's say, for example, mother's maiden name, because it's in my head. You walk up to someone and says, your mother's maiden name is Gregory. And you see people on the TV show going, wow, that is... Wow, how do you know that? That's surprising. And the reason you get that reaction is... Because it tells you the method, because some bullshit had to happen before the show. Otherwise, people would run screaming if that happened. And the same thing that happened at David Gerard's show, not there was pre-show stuff happening, but he was doing reveals that no one could remember where, what parameters, what what set that up to even get to that finish? So I think people are like, oh, wow, that's the end of that trick. I don't know what happened 45 minutes ago to set that up, but he seems pleased. Let's clap. So my pet hate is watching 15 things set up, none, and all sort of finishing on a sliding scale of time to make the methods work, but not necessarily for them to make the effect the best it can be.
And did you watch the talk, the lecture?
No, that's my review.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I really love this because I felt differently, but I can understand totally what you're saying, which is, you know, it's all very subjective. I felt this differently because of the same reasons, really. I struggle with mentalism and I love it. You know, I love learning it and I actually quite like performing it, but watching it, and most lay people I know love watching it. When I do a mentalism thing, sure, like a center tear with some, you know, like I said, bullshit, not in a bad way, but, you know, I'm sort of doing a really bad cold reading to try and get to it. They just love it. And they talk about mentalism. And when I've done mentalism in the show, which I felt fell flat, that was their favorite bit, all that stuff. I've talked about that before. So this is purely from a kind of magician's point of view. I really struggle with it in the same ways. And because of that, I loved it because I need that stimulation. You know, I need to be stimulated throughout the whole thing. So I kind of got on board with that. And which is probably magically a terrible thing to say, but I cared less about the reveals and the magic side of it.
Yeah.
Saying that, Helen came out of it and was completely blown away by it. She was like, how the hell? She has no idea, because I haven't tipped a lot of that to her. So that was great. And, you know, he did a version of, you know, fourth dimensional telepathy envelope test. And I was going, you know, I do that. And I wasn't saying it as well, I do that, you know. But I was saying, no, what was that thing? And I said, well, it's similar to what I do. But he did it in this different way that was just, truthfully, probably more how I'd like to do it. Not in that, but do you know what I mean? A bit more kind of, I do it and I'm trying to remember stuff and getting all confused and writing on the wrong envelopes and stuff. But
yeah,
so even though there were times when I kind of saw that he clearly wasn't going to get what he would get from his corporate gigs, which is, you know, people really getting into it and giving him that feedback. That never happens at magic conventions. It's, well, rarely.
No.
But I talked to him afterwards and he was pleased with it, which was a good sign, you know. And it was similar with Nick DeFat last year, which I thought was stunning. Wasn't getting what he deserved. And that isn't saying it was a bad audience. It is a magic convention audience. We're all tired. We know that.
Magic for magicians is it's a hard slog, and certainly if you're expecting comedy club or even corporate audience, you're not going to get that. You're going to get hands on laps.
Yeah, and I felt that both Nick DeFat and David Gerard kind of accepted that. Maybe afterwards,
hopefully.
But even if you accept it, when I performed at lectures and I don't get any response for the melon and the oranges, you know, you know that, you accept it, it's fine, but you can't help be a bit like, oh, it's a weird thing. But I did, and his talk was very similar vein. It was very clipped. It was very corporate. I liked it because of that, because it gave me some clarity. I was engaged in it. But I could also critique it for the same reason. So I think it's purely subjective, really. I think if you're on board with that, I'd rather that than a standard mentalism show, even from mentalists I love. You know, I love a routine, but a show, you know.
I think I'm probably the same. A lot of my position comes from the fact that I really, really hate watching mentalism. The truth is, I can never enjoy it. It is always torturous.
Yeah, and for any mentalist listening, I will say, don't take that as a criticism, because most people I know would probably hate watching my act. You know, it's not a...
And you're absolutely right when you said about mentalism for lay people. Like, if you do a mind reading, people blooming love it. And I'll be honest, I have padded out my close-up with some mentalism. We all need a dirty dice to stretch a gig. So I've... I have dipped my toe into to dirty mentalism in order to eke out 20 minutes at a show. So, but I truly hate it, and I find it very hard to concentrate. But that's on me, and not a reflection on mentalism.
And of course, we know a lot of the methods, which makes it hugely different. I think magic's like music, you know, it's, if you had a music, imagine having a music convention, you know, you just couldn't do it because they're so eclectic and it is very similar. You kind of, if you might see someone like, see, I'd love to see like a singer songwriting, singing really emotional ballads, basically my thing, or a Icelandic composer playing emotional minimal pieces on a piano. But then a jazz musician would come up who was technically incredible, which half the audience would go, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And I'd just be like, this is like pulling teeth, you know, unless I'm seeing it from a purely technical standpoint. So that's, I think, the richness of this thing that we love. Yeah. And also the problem with it when you're trying to bang it all into one event.
And that's why these things, you know, having a ton of different variety is the best thing. Like, to go back to the session, I didn't watch Ryan Plunkett. I imagine it was very good, but it was in the middle of the afternoon and it was in that sweet spot. I think there's probably an hour and a half either side of breaks as well, but I thought this is a perfect time for a siesta.
Yeah. And I know his stuff quite well because, I've pulled the book apart. So Alexander de Vouvier, I watched a bit of it and it was that thing of I have to sleep at one point. There has to be, because I do want to do that thing of being in the bar talking to people. So,
because that's the best bit, certainly for me. I mean, you know, I will have, like, I had a couple of goals going to the session. Me and Roddy have got new tricks for Blackpool. Come and see us at the stand. But mainly was, I thought, this is my last chance to be amongst some smart magician friends, get their thoughts on these things before we tie a bow in these tricks. So that was useful, having that deadline. And also, you know, it's like pre-season training for Blackpool. Want to, you know, you want to get your late night game sorted. You want to get your alcohol tolerances up. You want to, you know, be ready for sleeping 3 hours a night. So, yeah, it's a little bit of pre-season.
Great. Well, I'll top and tail this, obviously, and let people know where to find you at Blackpool, but also Trick Trick Boom. I'm very excited. You showed me a couple of things that are genuinely great. I think they're brilliant. One of them, just such a simple idea. And again, it's all about that for me. Simple concepts presented in a way that is fooling, but also very entertaining. So we'll talk about that when they come out. And I'll talk about the different, you know, products and things like that in another video probably. But you got to go. I've got to go.
Yeah.
That was great. Thanks, mate. Come back again. I'd like doing this with you. I don't like doing it on my own anymore. It's boring. So
deal.
let's just both host it, shall we? All right, mate. I'll pretend to say goodbye to you and just stay there for a sec. Pretend goodbye.
All right, pretend goodbye.
So thank you so much to Noel Coulter. I really, really enjoyed that and I hope you did too. Take everything we say with a pinch of salt. We don't know what we're talking about, so... You know more than us about what you like, but I think it's quite interesting just to sort of, you know, dig into these things. Hopefully I'll see some of you at Blackpool. I will be lecturing at 4 o'clock. Oh, I thought it was 5 o'clock. 4 o'clock on Saturday. I hope it's all right. Some of you said you'd come in. Do come. I don't want to do it to nobody. It'll be embarrassing. So 4 o'clock at Blackpool at the foyer bit, the new bit. Apologies to people who gave me stuff to review last year. I am actually going to do it. Don't think, because people gave me stuff to review at Blackpool, I just got loaded up and it's just taken me a long time. But I'm still reviewing stuff now that I got a year ago. So don't worry. Yeah, this stuff is timeless, even though we don't think it is. And I will be reviewing your stuff. I'm talking to you, Alakazam. I've got a boatload of stuff I haven't touched. So sorry about that. Oh, God, my voice is going. Thanks very much. Go and check out onlinemagic.co. Check out Trick Trick Boom online and at Blackpool. Come and see us. Come and say hello. And thank you for listening to my god-awful waffle for ages, meaning not the podcast. Take care, everyone. See you later.